Good evening, everybody. Welcome back. I hope everybody had a nice summer. We certainly did. And it's good to be back. I'm going to speak this week, Parshas Re'eh. We're going to talk about Berachas HaMazon, the halachas of benching. Actually, benching was in last week's Parsha, and Parshas Ekev, but didn't get to speak last week, so we'll go over some of the halachas this week. So the title, I guess, of these halachas, I would call where, when, and how. So first we'll talk about where. So benching needs to be done in the place where you ate. Now, it's not limited to the actual seat on the table where you sat. You can do it anywhere in the room. However, you do need to bench in the same room. A person should bench in the same room where he ate, regardless of the place. That doesn't make a difference. Now, if for whatever reason you can't bench in the same room, like, for example, in the middle of benching, you discover that there's a dirty diaper in the room and you need to finish benching, so you go into a different room. You can go into an adjacent room. So in that situation, you need to be able to see the place from where you ate from that room. So you can go into the next room as long as you can still see the place where you ate. Now, if you mistakenly left the room or you left the house before benching, you forgot that you needed to bench, and you left, and then you remembered that you need to bench. So the halacha is you're required to go back home and bench in the same room where you ate. Now, if it's a shas of chak, like, for example, you're on your way to work, and if you go back, you'll be late to work, or any other similar type of difficult situation, then you can bench where you are. Another situation where you shouldn't go home is by the time you remembered, if you were to go home, the 72 minutes or the amount of time you have that you can bench will pass. So then obviously you shouldn't go home because you won't accomplish anything. You won't be able to bench, and rather you should just bench where you are. But it's a very interesting thing. It's very important to know it's obligated to go back home and to bench. It's a very serious obligation. The Gemara says that a person who was machmir on this and went back home, even in situations where he wasn't obligated to, the Gemara says that he found a golden bird as his reward. So in any case, one situation where it's an exception to this is if you have some more bread. Because if you have more bread to eat, then instead of going back, what you could do is you can just eat it in the new place and then bench over there, and that you can do even l'chadchila. And what you can do is, you know, if you have a little bit of bread, you can bring it with you to the new place. Generally, once you've traveled, you need to wash again. Even though you don't make an alon tzidayim, you do need to wash again. And as far as making hamotzi is concerned, that depends. If you totally had not planned on eating anymore, so you did what would be called a hesach hadas, you totally had decided to stop eating, then you'd have to make a new hamotzi. But otherwise, your hamotzi from your original place would carry over wherever you go. So you could eat a less than a kazayas. So a kazayas is about a half a slice of rye bread or a one square matzah. So you can just eat a little bit and then bench in a new place. Now this halacha that you have to bench in the same place where you ate applies to mezainis as well. It's not limited to bread, as long as it's not like rice, but mezainis is made out of the five grains. So if you ate cookies and you left your house and then you realized I didn't make an alamichya, you need to go back home to that room and make an alamichya. And again, all the previous halachas apply, as we explained by bread, that you would go to the new place, eat more cookies, or whatever it is that, as we explained. Now that's where. Now let's talk about when. How much time do you have to bench after you finish eating? So no matter how little bread you ate, even if you just ate a kazayas, you can still bench up to 72 minutes from when you finished eating. Now, that's the minimum. Now, if you ate until you were satiated, so you're full, then the halacha is you can bench for even longer than 72 minutes, as long as you still feel full. Now, when we say you feel full, what that means is you feel like you ate, not just that you're not hungry. You can not be hungry even when you're fasting sometimes.
What it means is that you still feel like you just ate. So that's, as long as you have that feeling like I've just eaten, I don't need to eat anymore, you can bench, even if it's an hour or 2 hours afterwards. And this applies even if you became full on other things. In other words, you washed and you ate a slice of bread, and then you ate many other things. You ate a three-course meal. So the reason why you're full is not from bread. You're full from chicken or fish or whatever it is that you ate. That's fine because it's all part of the Suda, and that all counts as part, as if the bread is what's keeping you full. And therefore, you have until you don't feel full anymore to bench. And the truth is, the Mishnah Berurah says that sometimes by long, long Sudas, like by Chasanas, you can have eaten bread, and with more than 72 minutes will pass since you ate bread before you even get to the benching. But being that you ate other things, so you still feel full. Lastly, let's discuss how benching should be done. So the Mishnah Berurah says that benching should be done with a raised voice. And he says if you're a medaktik, or in other words, if you're a Yari Shemaim, he says you should bench within a siddur. My father-in-law likes to say that if we are careful to bench within a siddur, we're likely to discover whole paragraphs that we didn't know existed. Now, the Mishnah Berurah also says that if someone benches carefully and is medaktik in the words, he's muvtachla, he's guaranteed to have parnasa bekavet, to have all his sustenance, whatever he needs, money, clothing, food, bekavet in an honorable fashion his whole life. The Shulchan Aruch says that if someone asks you a question while you are benching, it's possibly like Shemana Esrei that you can't say anything. In other words, it's even more stringent than Kriya Shema. In the middle of Kriya Shema, there are times you're allowed to answer a question. But in the middle of benching, it's possibly as stringent as Shemana Esrei where you're not allowed to answer anybody no matter what. So that just goes to show us how important benching is and how Chazal treated it as literally as if you're davening Shemana Esrei. Halacha is you're supposed to sit while you're benching, and likewise Al Michya, you're supposed to sit. And though it does say, though, if you're traveling and you won't be able to concentrate if you sit down because you'll be too either distracted or worried, you are allowed to bench while you're walking as well. And lastly, this is an halacha that's not limited to benching. This really applies to all brachas. You're not allowed to do anything while you're benching, and you're not allowed to do anything while you're making a bracha. This is a basic kavod and respect to the person, to Hashem, that you're making a bracha to. You're speaking to Him, and therefore it's us, you're not allowed to do anything else. And this actually could be quite challenging. But that's a very clear halacha in Shulchan Aruch. In this week's parasha, in Parasha A, there is a very, very interesting mitzvah, a unique mitzvah. This is called the mitzvah of Ha'anaka. Ha'anaka literally means to give a present. It's a mitzvah which applies to an Eved Ivri, that when a person has a Jewish slave who worked for him for 6 years, and there are a number of reasons why a person would have a Jewish slave. The most common that we know is because the person stole and he has to pay back his debt, or there's another situation where a person can actually sell himself into slavery in order to make money. So regardless, at the point when he goes free, you're obligated to give him gifts. The Torah doesn't specify the exact amount you need to give, but the Gemara gives minimum amounts, and it's quite a bit. You have to give him a very significant amount of food and of animals and etc., a very nice sum of money worth of gifts. And we have to understand that this slave really is being paid in full for all his work, whether it's because of what he stole and he has a debt, or because he sold himself. But basically, it's the same as if you hired a worker for 6 years and you paid him full salary for those 6 years, whatever the going rate was. So he's been paid for all his work, but there's still an obligation to give more, a gift, when he leaves. What is the pshat in this obligation? What's the reason for it? So the Chinuch says that the point of this mitzvah is that we should acquire elevated and, to use his words, precious character traits. He says our beauty and our magnificence as a nation is our midah of rachmanis and chesed. And therefore, he says, we should give to someone who worked for us a present, a gift, as a chesed, besides what we made up to pay him. The Chinuch says that this is a self-understood concept, and there's no need to expound anymore. The Chinuch then goes on to say that likewise, nowadays, anytime a person works for you, whether it's a lot or a little, you should give them something extra. So what we have here is the Torah's source to the modern-day concept of tipping. It's a fascinating thing, because tipping is what we would think as just an extra. It's a nice thing to do. But in reality, it's an obligation. It's an obligation, and it's to the point where the Chinuch says it's something which is self-understood. It's understood that we should do chesed to someone that has done something for us, someone who worked for us. We have a midah of rachmanis and a midah of chesed. I saw an article written by Rav Zweig where he gives a deeper insight into this mitzvah, a beautiful pshat. And he says that if you look at the way people tip nowadays, the tendency is that certain services you tip for and certain you don't. If you check in your luggage at the curbside check-in, then the guy schleps the luggage for you inside, you give him a tip. If you check in the luggage at the counter, the guy behind the counter, you don't give him a tip. You tip a barber, you don't tip a cashier necessarily. So he says that the reason is because when someone does a personal service for you, once it gets to a point where even though he's being paid for what he's doing, he's a salaried employee, but he did something for you, it's somewhat demeaning to him. He serviced you. And therefore, we give him a tip to show our hakara satayv and to restore dignity to the person serving us. That's how we show our appreciation for what he's done for us. This slave that a yid had for 6 years, and he served you whatever as a slave, whatever you wanted from him, he did. And he totally gave himself over to your service. Therefore, we're obligated to show hakara satayv, show appreciation, and thereby restore his dignity. He explains that that's why the Torah uses this interesting verb of ha'anaka, which instead of saying just giving, like titain, the Torah says ha'anaka. Ha'anaka, the shayrish of the word anak, is a jewel or a necklace. Rashi explains that we need to adorn the slave with jewelry. So in other words, he explains that this concept of giving jewelry to the slave is to elevate him, to give him chashivas, to give him importance, to show that we respect him as a person. And by doing that, we're showing the true hakara satayv. That's the true hakara satayv that we can show by respecting the person as a person. Rav Belsky Zatzal was once asked if there's an obligation to tip. So the person who was asking the question had been at a Jewish hotel for Pesach, and he had tipped the waiters and the busboys the amount that the hotel suggested you tip. And he saw they were all Yidden, and they complained to him about a number of people who didn't tip. So he went over to those people and thought he would bring it to their attention, and they were upset at him for mixing in. So he asked Ravelsky, is this something which is a real obligation, and therefore he was right for giving techacha, for admonishing them. So Ravelsky quoted a Gemara Maseches Megillah, a very interesting Gemara, Daf Chavav. It's talking about that during the time of Aliyah L'Regel, when everybody came from all over Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim, then that they needed a place to stay. So there were many innkeepers in Yerushalayim, but the halacha was they were not allowed, according to some Tanoim, they were not allowed to charge rent. They had to let everybody sleep in their hotels rent-free. However, it says that the proprietors of these hotels had the right to take the hides of the animals that all the Yidden brought as karbanos, and they were bringing hundreds of karbanos, thousands, tens of thousands of karbanos, they had the right to appropriate the hides of the animals, which were quite valuable, and they were able to take it even against the will of their tenants. And the Gemara goes on to say that we can learn from here that it's derech eretz to leave a tip for any innkeeper, even if you are paying for your stay, it's derech eretz to leave a tip for your innkeeper, and the Gemara then goes on to explain what exactly you should leave as a tip. A particular some leftover of whatever it is you ate, etc., some small amount, but there is an amount that there cheret sigmar says to leave for an innkeeper. So Belsky explains the interesting dynamic here. He says that generally a tip is voluntary, which the Gemara says there cheret, but in the situation in Yerushalayim where the innkeepers weren't even making any money, their entire income was coming from the tip, then he explained it became obligatory. It was mandatory. So he says, these people, these waiters or busboys, they don't get a salary. Their total income relies on tips. So it's not merely a nice thing to do, it's mandatory as well. I spoke once to a yid that worked behind the counter of a food service store, either a bagel store or a pizza store, and he told me that it's there is a jar there for tipping because he prepares your food for you, not just the cashier. And he said all the non-Jews that came to the store often, more often than not, tipped. And unfortunately, the Jews, more often than not, did not tip. And I'm Dan Lakaschos, that it's perhaps we don't understand and realize the expectation that the person behind the counter has to get a tip. But regardless, we see it's very, very important to give a tip. So to summarize, the obligation to give a tip stems from three fundamentals in Yiddishkeit. Number one, it's Midas HaChesed and Midas Rachmanis, like the Chinuch said. Secondly, it's Midah of appreciation, of Akaras HaTayif, of restoring dignity to the person who's doing a service for you. And thirdly, it's possibly a real obligation, because this is the sole income for the person doing the job. But most of all, there is a true element of Chilul Hashem involved, being that it's an accepted practice, it's considered derech eretz, it's considered menschlichkeit, it's considered what decent people do. Therefore, by not doing that, we might inadvertently be demonstrating that we're not decent people, and that's a chilul Hashem. So we see the importance of all these three concepts, where by doing something as small as tipping, we have the ability to make a good impression and a Kiddush Hashem. Have a good Shabbos and a good night. Kol Tov.